I prefer really not to speak. If I speak, I am in big trouble. In big trouble. And I don't want to be in big trouble.
Isn't it funny how thousands upon thousands of people getting on someone's back through social media can change that person's outlook or behavior? Welcome to another edition of If I Speak. It is the 24th of June. I'm your host, Stel, as ever, and before I start this podcast, I'd just like to, first of all, apologize for the sound quality. I am currently sitting in the car, in the car park, waiting for my daughter to finish school. I'm here an hour early, purely because I've come to get parking. I've had a half day at work, and I've come to find some parking so I can sit here and gather my thoughts and talk to you guys. So apologies for the sound quality if it isn't great, or if it's a bit echoey. Or if you think I have to shout, but I shout anyway. Right now, I'm the only person in this car park, which is fantastic. But I'm really looking forward to when some parents turn up in their big cars and when they actually struggle to park. Because for some reason, a lot of parents who have these big cars, in fact, that a lot of parents that drive, really struggle to park. Now, I'm not saying that it's a certain gender that struggles to park, but it is. But it's brilliant because you sit there watching them and they reverse, they find a space, they reverse, they try to get in. And a lot of these cars have got parking sensors. In fact, some of them even have cameras. So you see them trying to park in that space and you look in and she'll reverse in, then she'll pull out, she'll straighten it up, then she'll go in, and then she looks left and right, and then she turns the wheel to the left and pulls out and then goes back in again. And you're sitting there thinking, hang about. You could get a bus in there. And she pulls out again. And you look at the space, you're thinking, you can get a ship in that space. And then she pulls out again. And you're thinking, fuck me, that size is like the Great Wall of China. And you're struggling to get in that space. And you're annoyance becomes sympathy. You start feeling sorry for her and you're like, come on, go, you can do it, you can do it. And then you half expect all the other parents to come out and do the same, and there's always going to be one parent that stands in front of the car kind of directing them. And then when all of this ends, you actually realize that apart from you, she's the only person in the car park. And she's tried to get in the space when there's no one else around. Anyway, going back to what I was saying at the beginning of the pod, it was related to Jesse Lingard. Isn't it funny how a couple of days after I did the podcast, all of a sudden Jesse Lingard is being serious? Now, I'm not saying that Jesse actually heard the podcast, not in the slightest. But I find it quite a coincidence that a day after Anthony Martial was video training, that the day after Scott McTominay was filmed training, that Jesse Lingard would be on the beach doing deadlifts. Now, I highly doubt Jesse Lingard took 225 kilo plates to Miami with him on holiday. And a bar, obviously, or whatever it is that he was using to lift. I think it's a hexagonal bar, actually. I think that's what it's called. I'm not sure. So he's probably gone to the gym downstairs in the hotel and said, look, can I borrow a couple of weights? And he's gone outside to video because that's how serious he is. He's training on the beach. He's doing deadlifts. And to be fair, Jesse's form was pretty decent, you know. He could have pinched his shoulders back a little bit more, but his form was pretty decent. And he's doing it barefooted as well. So shout out to Jesse Lingard for doing a few deadlifts on the beach, you know. But I'm pretty sure his management team saw all of those tweets to him and said, Jesse, you need to do something, mate, because your peers are training and here's you videoing your mates humping a pillow. I think had it not been for Anthony Martial's video or McTominay's video, Jesse Lingard wouldn't have done that. But that's just my opinion. Anyway, story number one, the story that has literally broke about half an hour ago. And Rafa Benitez is no longer the Newcastle United manager. Now, those of you that listened to the Pogba podcast two shows ago would have heard me waxing lyrical about Rafa Benitez, how great of a manager he is, and I stand by it. So what has happened? I mean, we knew that he was out of contract at the end of the month. We heard of interest for Rafa Benitez by a club in China, offering him apparently 12 million quid a year to become their manager. We knew about a potential takeover, which we haven't really heard about since. The potential takeover of Newcastle United. So what has happened? Now, let's be real here. Rafa Benitez can practically walk into most jobs. In fact, he can walk into any job, I think. So what's happened at Newcastle United for him to walk? I've got a few guesses. Perhaps during the contract renewal negotiations, he asked for more money, more financial backing. Mike Ashley said, sorry, mate, you're going to have to work with the same budget as what you did last season. So he's going to have to rely on £20 million signings like Almiron and £4 million signings like Dubravka and all these other, you know, loose change signings that they've made. Perhaps Rafa Benitez wanted to know what was going on with the takeover. And Mike Ashley said, sorry, mate, it was a big publicity stunt. I just went to Dubai for a break, spoke to the guy that was there, and we put out a little story to boost the club's value, to make it seem that there's interest because no one else really wants the club. And Rafa's gone, fuck this shit, I'm gone. Or maybe, just maybe, and this is just a guess, Mike Ashley was courting another manager and Rafa Benitez found out about it and he was like, well, since I'm out of contract at the end of the month, pay me up, Mike, and I'll go now. Clever, isn't it? There's only a few days left to the end of his contract. Perhaps he's just walked without taking a payout. We don't know. Anything could have happened. But something tells me that there's obviously been a fallout between the two. And that's it. So what does this mean for Newcastle United? Well, they're without a manager. They've got an owner that is known for being frugal. So what happened to the big money spending that Mike Ashley promised Newcastle fans? Cast your mind back to May 2015, the final game of the season. Newcastle United versus West Ham United. Now, Mike Ashley gave an interview to Sky Sports before the game saying that basically everything fell at his door. So if Newcastle were to get relegated that day, it would be his fault. And that he would pump money into the club. Well, Newcastle had to beat West Ham and hope that Hull City didn't beat Man City. Well, as it turns out, Newcastle beat West Ham 2-0. It so happened to be Sam Allardyce's last game in charge as West Ham United manager. Now, Big Sam was at Newcastle for a short period of time. And he was hounded out of the club. But it was his last game as West Ham head coach. His contract wasn't going to be renewed. And you'd have thought that it would have been a massive parting shot to Mike Ashley for his team to beat Newcastle. But as it turns out, Newcastle won 2-0. And then Mike Ashley gave another interview after the game saying that he's not going to sell the club until they win something. And he actually classed qualifying for the Champions League as winning something. He'd have been fucking great as the Arsenal chairman, wouldn't he? But yeah, Mike Ashley decided that he was going to spend some money at the club. And a few years later, here we are. Same shit. Same issues. But he's got a massive task on his hands. There was a potential takeover bid last year, or was it in January? I can't remember. That didn't go through. There's been the rumours of a takeover from Zayed in Dubai. That hasn't happened. They're without a manager. Just seems to me that Mike Ashley wants to do everything on the cheap. But let's be 100% honest here. The amount of money that comes in from the Premier League TV deal, why does he need to worry about spending money? I mean, it's a business, right? and Newcastle were easy a mid-table team. Granted, it was due to Rafa Benitez and the magic that he worked. But I'm pretty sure that Mike Ashley is looking at the teams that have come up and he's thinking, well, I could bring in a fairly decent manager. Perhaps Eddie Howe is on his radar. You never know. If he can bring in someone like Eddie Howe, who I doubt will reject the opportunity to join Newcastle, he can do well with a £20-30 million fund, can't he? I mean, it's not as if he hasn't spent at Bournemouth. He can bring in someone like Eddie Howe, maintain their Premier League position, rake in that TV money again for another year, and repeat. Eat, sleep, save money, repeat. Eat, sleep, rake in the money, repeat. Whichever way you want to put it. So I wouldn't put it past Mike Ashley for finding another manager already, or speaking to another manager already. So yeah, interesting times ahead, but I'm not going to lie, I don't feel sorry for the Newcastle fans, and I know I'm going to get a lot of stick for this, but hey, unlucky. Sleeping giant, they call them. How long is a giant asleep for until it's dead? All right, one more thing relating to the Newcastle job. Now, don't worry, my daughter isn't in the car. I've taken her home. So, don't worry about that. She's in good company at the moment. Final thing about the Newcastle job is, first of all, if Newcastle were to appoint a non-BAME head coach while the Women's World Cup is on, will anyone complain? Will anyone bat an eyelid? Because it goes back to what I said before in a previous podcast. It isn't topical, is it? It isn't. So, if Newcastle were to bring in, I don't know, Eddie Howe, David Moyes, anyone that isn't of colour, while the Women's World Cup is on, will there be a backlash? Will anyone be complaining? I doubt it. But you can bet your backside that once the Women's World Cup is over, and if Newcastle appoint a non-BAME head coach, all the same people from the past that were calling Brighton racists or West Brom racists for sacking their managers, they're going to be coming out saying, oh, what about black and minority ethnic managers? Where are they? Where are they? And when they do, I'm going to remind them of all their tweets during the Women's World Cup, how they completely ignored that subject. Yep. I put out a tweet the other day, and I'm sure it fucking upset a few people. Where are all of these equality charities? Where are they? All the ones in the past that are criticising the FA for not doing enough for racism, for criticising fans for not reporting racism, for not believing that racism was taken serious. Where are they now? Right now? They're too busy putting out tweets about the Women's World Cup and women in football. No mention about Middlesbrough appointing a non-black manager. No reports or any suggestions that Birmingham City or Newcastle should appoint a BAME manager. Nothing. Where are they? Focusing on topical subjects to get attention, to make themselves known. Jumping on bandwagons, pretending that they care about certain issues. Nah, I don't see that. I don't buy into it. Speaking of Women's World Cup, a little incident occurred the other day between England and Cameroon, which made me chuckle a little bit. I don't know the names of these players, but all I know is that a Cameroon player spat on an England player. Apparently, the referee decided not to use VAR or went against VAR because Cameroon players threatened to walk off the pitch. I don't know how true that bit is. But it just reminds you of all the times that whenever I hear or read tweets from people saying, oh, people that are criticising the women's game are taking it back 30 years, you know, they're denigrating the game, they're living in the Stone Ages. Well, hang about. This Cameroon player took women's football back 30 years, back to Italia 90, when Cameroon were fucking taking out Claudio Caniggia, using him like a fucking battering ram. Kicking players left, right and centre. firing them up in the air. That's what they're doing to the Argentinians. If you remember rightly, the opening game of Italia 90, Cameroon players were using Argentinian players as crash test dummies. In fact, it reminded me of when Frank Rijkaard spat in Rudy Voller's hair. So we've had Italia 90 brought back to life. There you go. 29 years. 29 years ago, Italia 90 was. And the women's Cameroon team have replicated some of the incidents that happened back then. So yeah, what I find even more interesting was Phil Neville criticising Cameroon's tactics, you know, saying that they were too aggressive and this and that. This is the same Phil Neville, if you guys remember, was kicking lumps out of Antonio Reyes and admitted to it. He was kicking lumps out of Arsenal players and especially Jose Antonio Reyes. And now he's turning around saying that, you know, it wasn't a great advert for women's football because little girls are watching it. But this is the same Phil Neville that was making tweets and joking tweets about his missus being in the kitchen before he became England head coach. So yeah, Phil Neville needs to lay off the hypocrisy, man. But then again, a lot of those class of 92 guys need to shut their mouths. So yeah, I won't go into that one. Okay, another story. There seems to be a Glazers out campaign by Man United fans on social media. They're looking for every single Man United sponsor, every corporate partner, tweeting them, hashtagging Glazers out, mentioning the amount of money taken out of the club by the owners and how, you know, these companies shouldn't be associated with them because it's making them look bad and yada, yada, yada. And great, listen, I'm all for a campaign. No, I was at the protest back in 2004, 2005 when the club was being taken over. And yeah, hit them where it hurts. If attacking the corporates and potentially turning their heads to remove themselves from being any associated in any way with the club, great. But I'm just going to tell it like it is. You ain't going to get rid of these owners. You're not going to get rid of them this way. The less that they invest in players, the worse the club is going to get. So effectively, they're shooting themselves in the foot. But I've been saying this for a long time. If you want Ed Woodward out, if you want the Glazers out, you're going to have to do it in ways that are very inhumane. I said it. You're going to have to do it in ways that are deplorable. Downright illegal. I'm not going to make any suggestions or give any ideas because then I'll be held accountable for it. But let me tell you this now. If this shit was happening in Greece, in Turkey, in Italy, in Spain, the owners would know about it. The owners' families would know about it. Let that sink in. What I find incredibly ironic is that Darcy Glazer, one of the sister of the Glazers, has been wanting to sell the club for years, but today she took out some money. I don't know the exact amount. It's a few million, but she took out money out of the club for herself. Funny that. Same as what they did with Bobby Charlton. Bobby Charlton wasn't happy with the Mourinho signing, didn't want Mourinho at the club. What did the club do? They named a stand after him. Haven't heard anything since. Bobby Charlton's gone silent. MUTV didn't do the Paddy Creran show the other day, purely because they knew that fans would call up and vent their anger. And why not? It's troll-like, isn't it? But they're trying to get their point across. And as a United fan, I'd love to see the owners leave. I'd like to see new owners. But as I said before, these guys ain't going to go. They're going to go on their own terms. Or if they're forced out. Again, you guys can make of that what you will. Speaking of United, they've been linked with Aaron Wan-Bissaka. This transfer, I don't know if it's going to happen. You hear all sorts of reports that United made the £30 million offer. It was a derisory offer. Palace wanted more. It's gone back and forth. The question is, how come Real Madrid have been able to sign 4, 5, 6 players this summer? And United are still stalling on one. How come Real Madrid can get their deals done Yet when Man United needs to bring in players, Ed Woodward is on a 2-week holiday. Just shows you where the priorities are. There's no structure United. There's nothing going on. There's nothing. And what makes it even worse is that the club are going to sign 2 or 3 players. It's going to pacify the fans. And then that's it. All these protests, all these planned protests, all these ideas, they're going to go out the window. It's going to pacify the fans. In fact, from what I'm hearing, the latest planned protest or march is planned by a guy called P.A. Ward. That's a known fraud. The guy's been begging for money over the years. His kid needs an iPad. His kid needs this. His kid needs that. Takes photographs of his house during Christmas and there's hundreds of toys. The guy's a fucking fraud. And he's planning these marches and asking people to donate. Keep your hands in your pockets, guys. Honestly. The guy's a fucking fraud. Speaking of frauds, Aidy Boothroyd. Wow. How this guy is in charge of the England under-21s, I don't know. Now, let's be honest. While England does have a pool of talent at that age group, they need a coach there that can look after them. A coach that has, I don't know, the opposite to archaic tactics. Because I've spoken to some players that have played under Aidy Boothroyd, and they really don't rate him. And in fact, apart from a half-decent tenure at Watford, what else has Aidy Boothroyd done? Northampton? Coventry City? Just seems like another one of these coaches that is part of the old boys club. Perhaps his agent knows someone high up. Wouldn't it be great to see a refreshing manager with new ideas? Someone that can keep up with the times? It seems to me that, you know, Aidy Boothroyd needs to be out the door as soon as possible. I don't know. To be fair though, I mean, I haven't really been paying too much attention to the under-21s, especially England. I remember when Chris Bart-Williams was playing. Wasn't Chris Bart-Williams playing for the under-21s at like 24 years old? Whatever happened to him anyway? I remember he went to play in Cyprus for a bit after Nottingham Forest. What happened to Chris Bart-Williams? Is he coaching in America now? I don't know. Just one bit of transfer news I want to discuss. Tierney, the Celtic left back, he's been linked with Arsenal. And I'm already seeing Arsenal fans uploading videos on social media with Tierney's assists and his goals. I put out a tweet the other day because Arsenal have been linked with Carrasco, and I'm saying, you watch. If they sign him, you're going to see statistical comparisons between Carrasco and Daniel James. You're going to see it. And I guarantee you, I'm going to call it now, if Arsenal sign Tierney from Celtic, you're going to see comparisons between him and Robertson of Liverpool. Guarantee it. Because the unhinged, clout-chasing fan base love a stat and they love a poll, don't they? But they've been quiet on the transfer front, haven't they? They're already talking about themselves doing a march, a protest. Funny that. Following United's lead, eh? Oh, well. The gift that keeps on giving. Anyway, this has been a bit of a shorter show than normal. Thank you to everyone that's been listening. Thanks for everyone that's been putting out tweets, especially Nima, who loved my Jesse Lingard story on my Spanish anecdote. And everyone else that's been contributing, everyone, there's been so many of you, I really appreciate it. So yeah, if you like what you've heard, feel free to at me on Twitter at Uncle Stell. We also have a Twitter page for the podcast, it's at Shoot the Defence. So until next time, guys, have fun, be safe, spread some love.